Mississippi and all surrounding areas. You've tuned in to the Free Range Human Show of Choice. Your daily dose of reality radio starts now. We are not taking the holiday off. We're not. We're live. We're not at the bank. We don't have bank hours around here. And frankly, I'm not supporting a new holiday until y'all make January 6th a national holiday. So with that said, this is the Clay Edwards Show. I am, of course, Clay Edwards. And we're going to jump in hot this morning, man. We have got local cattle farmer. Bradley, what else would you, what would be your technical title?
I guess technically you should call us a rancher.
Rancher.
I like the term farmer a lot better.
Yeah. No, in Mississippi, we ranchers are Texas, farmers are Mississippi, right?
Yeah. I've always wanted to be a farmer.
Well, you're a farmer it is then. If men can be women and women can be men, you dang well can be a farmer. You know, I identify as a farmer. All right. I kid. I got jokes this morning. Look. If you guys want to call in, the Mack Hike of Flowood phone line is 601-879-0002. Check them out online today. If you're off work, if you work at a bank and you're not there today, go buy a car. Mack Hike of Flowood. That's MackHikeCDJRF.com. Guns and Gear, the text line, 769-241-1944. Again, if you're off work today, go buy a gun. They're the home of no-limit ammo. That's right. If they got it, you can buy it. If you got the cash, if you got the money, honey. Anyway, I digress. Guns and Gear, the text line, 769-241-1944. All right, man. I am in the studio with Bradley Coker, with Coker Farms out of Brandon. He's a cattle farmer, and he also has a really cool, like, old-school milk truck that they've converted into this hot rod-looking meat delivery van. And I think it's just one of the coolest things, one of the neatest ideas, and it talk about farm to table.
Yeah.
I mean, it's farm to your driveway. It's really cool. We're going to get into a bunch of stuff today. We're going to talk about the cattle industry in general. We're going to talk about the cattle deaths in Kansas and realistically what probably caused that. But look, I want to start off, we're going to build a little foundation, tell you guys about Bradley, tell you about Coker Farms, and kind of let him tell you about himself a little bit so you understand why we brought him on the show. But, Bradley, what motivated you to do the delivery service and all that?
Well, we had a store in Brandon for about a year, and, you know, we were expecting the customer to come to us, and everybody lives such fast, you know, paced lifestyle. So we decided to build this a 78 model P10 step van, and I'm a hot rod guy, too. So it's kind of like my passion for hot rods and farming came together. But we just had an idea. We'll take this to the customer instead of waiting for the customer to come to us. So I built the van, and we've been doing that since February, and it's going really good. But we do go to a lot of different neighborhoods, farmers markets, and that kind of thing. We're almost somewhere every day. So that's going well.
I see the truck everywhere. I mean, I typically send you a picture of it when I see it going down the road. Like, yeah. Hey, and it's always the other guy that you got running it, isn't it?
Yeah, we're running. Yeah, that's the guy that works for me, man. We're running the miles up on that thing, and we're having a lot more neighborhoods request us every day to come and set up because – you know, meat's kind of getting hard to find. So for it to come to your neighborhood right there, you can shop right there out of the van. It's a pretty unique experience.
And you raise these cattle, have them slaughtered, cut them, or do you have a facility that does the cutting for you?
I have all my cattle processed in Macomb, Mississippi. And that's
USDA, as you're
telling me? It's a USDA plant. And so we raise it ourselves, and I carry it up to a butcher weight. And then we take it to them. And they process it, if it's for a client, they process it to their desire, their cut sheet. They dry age it, and then they vacuum seal it and flash freeze it. We'll pick it up from the processor and deliver it to the client.
So is all steak dry aged like that? Like if you take it to a cattle, or is that just
most
USDA?
Of the time they're going to dry age it, even at a custom processing plant.
Got it. Because, you know, you watch a lot of these videos online of these high-end steak houses and stuff, and they do their own dry aging and this,
yeah,
that, and the other.
And they'll wet age it as well.
Yeah, and I'm like, man, that seems like a heck of a process there. So everything you're getting is typically dry aged a little bit to some point.
Yeah, 10 to 14 days. Anything after that, you start losing a lot of meat.
Yeah, kind of dehydrates, right?
Yeah, you'll lose a lot of the percentage.
Interesting. So on your cattle, what do they average? How much meat weight do you get off each cow, roughly?
So we try to get them to about 1,100 to 1,200 pounds, and, you know, you're going to get – hanging weight of about 60% of that value, and then from there you're going to get 64% in meat of that carcass value. So on a 1,200 pound steer, you're technically supposed to get about 450 to 470 pounds. Just depends on how long the carcass hangs and of course the butcher.
Yes, I was looking last night kind of what the national average was. You nailed it. It was they said 440 on Google, 450, 460. And I broke that up to talking about all that cattle that died in Kansas. And I was just kind of looking at, well, what is the immediate hit on the market, something like that, does it? At the end of the day, it's big numbers. It can sound scary, but it's just a drop in the bucket, right?
Yeah, as far as immediate effect, it's not going to really affect a whole lot. Now, the Packers are pretty down in their numbers. They're trying to buy a lot of green cattle. We were supposed to have a huge influx of cattle right now because there was a drought last winter. It wasn't a lot of winter forage to put all these cattle on. And so they put them in the feedlots. And the feedlots, all the pens were full. They were at maximum capacity. And so we were looking for a big wall to hit right now of these calves. And, we were thinking the meat prices were going to drop. But that's not the case. They're short on cattle right now. So, it may not have an immediate effect, but it probably will have an effect at some point in time.
Well, you lose a day of processing. But the way I understood it, those slaughterhouses out there slaughter about 2,000 cows a day. The one in Kansas, or more. 2,000 days. So you lose a day's worth of cattle, and that's right at 1 million pounds, give or take.
Yeah.
Each, and I dug a little deeper. I don't know where these humans are that only consume 55 pounds of meat a year, but the average human only consumes about 55 pounds of meat a year, which is about a quarter pound a day. Man, I ate a 20-ounce ribeye last night. So I've only got 54 pounds left to go, 53 and a half pounds left to go. Anyway, but it will put a little dent in the market, but at the end of the day, it's not going to be terrible.
No, we butcher 600,000 head a week. I mean, 10,000 head, it's not going to.
That's in America?
Yeah. But the bigger problem we're having besides those 10,000 head is, why are the Packers buying green cattle and pushing a show list up to buy? They're desperate for cattle right now, which kind of tells us, and the cattle market's been going up, thankfully, because we deserve it. But that just kind of tells me they're short on cattle. And at that point in time, meat may get a little bit more expensive.
Now, let me rewind just a little bit, because I do want to clear one thing up. We keep going back and forth between the number 2,000 and 10,000 on this Kansas incident. There was some misreporting as we dug a little deeper into this. 2,000 died in that instantaneous, what we're guessing. We'll get to it, but my theory is a heat burst, and I think we're kind of on the same page there.
Yeah.
And so 2,000 died immediately there, but 10,000 did die in that same storm or heat burst, whatever you want to call it, throughout the state. And that's kind of being reported as happening on this one feedlot, and that's not the case.
No. And, those cattle, they had a big storm, like you said, about 4 days of rain. The pens were wet and muddy, and then they had some very, very extreme temperatures. And then at night, it didn't cool down much. And that's usually when cattle dissipate their heat.
Did not get below 100.
Yeah, and the wind wasn't blowing at all. So, those cattle were sitting there baking in those pens. And, it's impossible to have a covered pen for that many head of cattle, and plus sunlight does so much for them. So, it's just one of those deals. It's a tragedy, but what do you do?
Also one of the things, these are cow that had just gotten fattened up and were fissing to be slaughtered.
Yeah, they were about to be on the show.
So they're at their highest risk of heat death.
Yeah.
At that point. And then you throw this in. Nobody's a bigger conspiracy theorist than Clay Edwards, but you got to make it make sense for me too.
Yeah.
And for me on this particular incident, I think there were just enough coincidences at play that led to their untimely death. It is funky. I will admit, and then there's some rumors, not rumors, there's some facts going back to 2019, 2020 of a bunch of mysterious drones flying over there, even to the point that the FFA Homeland Security, DHS, had a meeting with farmers and Kansas politicians about these drones that they've seen flying over there. So there's a bunch of weird stuff that was going on, but this particular incident, I believe, was just a heat burst or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, it's not going to affect the market. The Packers are probably, hopefully, will absorb some of this extra cost on their side and not the consumer side, and maybe we won't see a whole lot of different prices.
As far as the farmer or rancher themselves, they have insurance. It'll cover some of this, correct?
Yeah, well, you do have some insurance when you send them to the feedlot like that, but it's a bad deal, but there's a lot more that's a lot more of a long-term problem in this country than that short-term problem, you know. So, you know, that's, you know, there are a lot of farmers selling out every week because of the input cost on this deal. I mean, to lose 10,000 head is a big problem, but the bigger problem we have in this country is losing farmers just by the week selling out. The input costs are too much. You know, they're so determined that they've been fighting and fighting for years and years to try to offset this and try to find some way to make money. And now that with the input costs of $5 fuel and everything else, they're selling out, and that's going to be a really big problem in the future.
I want to take a dive into that. Let's take a call real quick here on the Matt Hike of Flowood phone line. Hey, caller, you're on the air with Clay Edwards and Bradley Coker. How you doing?
Hey, pretty good. I saw something on the internet. You know, it could be nothing. It could be everything. But anyway, it was an article that was saying that farmers are getting paid not to take their cattle to the butcher, but to basically destroy them. They're getting paid more than they would if they take it to the slaughterhouse. Have you heard anything about that?
I have not. I mean, none of the guys that I'm friends with that are in the farm-to-table movement have gotten any kind of phone call like that. So I that's the first I've heard anything like that, and I seriously doubt that they would do that.
Well, I didn't really believe it either. It didn't make sense. But then, you know, you look at the 99 factories or the burned out or whatever it is, and then you look at the 10,000 cow dead, and then you look at the chickens that killed, and I'm just like, you know, all that stuff sounds crazy. Is this really crazy? So I wanted to ask.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are a lot of things that's going on in the country that's questionable, but one thing is I don't believe that there's a farmer anywhere around here that would take some money like that. You know, farmers really care about their product and what we're raising and the heritage of it. And I don't think anybody would turn their back on the public.
Right, good to hear. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, man.
Appreciate it, brother. Now, I do know this. There are times where maybe USDA, whoever is in charge of all that, I don't know all the government agencies, but some farmers do get paid not to farm their land, but that's not so much from a cattle.
No.
That's like soybean and stuff of that nature.
Yeah.
You know, that where they're being paid, just don't use your land.
I get, right.
Because it's a commodities business, and they can keep the commodity price higher if they control the amount of product there is.
Yeah, I mean, these farmers, they're trying to get their cattle sold as fast as they can because they're about to, you know, they're drowning in input costs like it is. So, I mean, I highly doubt that, but.
Yeah. All right, look, we're going to take a break real quick. You're listening to the Clay Edwards Show. I'm joined by Bradley Coker with Coker Farms. Go give them a follow on Facebook and communicate with them. Maybe you can get some Coker Farms locally sourced meat delivered straight to your neighborhood. Coker Farms on Facebook. We'll be right back on the Clay Edwards Show on 103.9 WYAB.
America, you love your country, so it goes without saying that you also love your ride. And Auto Armor in Flowood wants to help you make that ride shine. Auto Armor in Flowood is Central Mississippi's premier automotive detail and ceramic coating shop, servicing any type of vehicle, including ATVs, boats, and more. Need just a quick detail or paint correction? Auto Armor can make it happen. But if you're set to hit the road in a blaze of glory while flying the old red, white, and blue, Auto Armor should be your first and last call to give your ride a full ceramic coating. Auto Armor is locally owned and operated by the loud and proud American patriot Clay Edwards. Auto Armor also proudly backs the blue, all military and first responders. So don't forget to ask for your discount. Call 601-260-0858. 601-260-0858. Or stop in today, fellow Americans. Auto Armor is located at 4394 Mangum Drive in Flowood. Online at AutoArmorMS.com. Auto Armor, unapologetically American.
All right, welcome back into the Clay Edwards Show. This segment is going to be brought to you by Lakeland Glass and Tent. Go see my buddy Jason Anderson and his team right over there on Lakeland Drive and now at their new campus on Flowood Drive, right across from the River Oaks or Merritt Health ER there. You can't miss them on the corner. If you need your automobile glass replaced, go to the Lakeland Drive location. If you want to get your car windows tinted, go to the new location. They're also doing vehicle wraps. So if you want to get your logo done on your vehicle, if you want to get a wall wrap, man, just give them a call. Check them out. Lakeland Glasses can do everything now. LakelandGlassAndTent.com or give them a call. 601-946-1000. Lakeland Glass and Tent, where quality matters. All right. I am joined in studio by Mr. Bradley Coker with Coker Farms. He's a local meat rancher or meat farmer, I'm sorry, cattle farmer. meat farmer. I actually titled this, I made my notes, and on the top of it, I just kind of tried to give each show a title, and I was like, cattle rapture. Just talking about what had happened in Kansas. I actually went through about three or four different names, like meat apocalypse, blah, 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 and I ended on cattle rapture. But I actually got a, we got a text here on the Guns and Gear text line. Let's see here, man. It says, three rules of thumb concur. One, control media. Two, control commodities distribution. Three, create civil unrest. Okay, yeah. I'll get to that. Good stuff there. So, Brad, a couple weeks ago, I called you. We had a – I hadn't told the story on the radio yet. My one of my daughters works for a local mobile vet. And I get a call from my wife that says, hey, Gracie's bringing home a cow to save. Well, keep in mind, we live in Cross Gates in a neighborhood. Gracie's bringing home a cow to save. I'm like, no, we cannot save a cow. We cannot have a cow in the neighborhood. And sure enough, I get home and the cow's already there. They weren't asking permission. They were asking forgiveness. So there's a day-old calf in my backyard, or cow in my backyard, and they're trying to milk it and get it back to life. I guess the mother was rejecting it because it wasn't strong enough to suck on the nipple there. And I did not know who to call. So I mean, Bradley's the only person I knew to call. I said, man, look, here's what I'm dealing with. Is there any shot of saving this thing? What do we need to do? He coached us through it. Unfortunately, the cow still didn't see. He made it another day and it passed. The guy that they were trying to save it for came and got it. Yada, yada, yada. But I was like, so, but 7 years ago, you were that guy almost, right? You say the first time you touched a cow was 7 years ago. Yeah. You're not a second generation farmer. This is first generation.
Yep.
What got you into this, bro?
Man, I wanted to raise my kids on a farm. And I'm a nurse anesthetist full time. And always been fascinated by farming and really looked up to them. And so I wanted to raise my kids on a farm, teach them responsibilities and that. So I bought a farm out in Pillahatchie and bought my first cows. And when they got delivered, I had no idea what to do. I had read about six books and, you know, watch YouTube, but there's nothing like when they actually unload them and you're like, man, what have I gotten myself into? Yeah. And I had
are stubborn.
Yeah, luckily I had a good group of guys behind me to teach me, you know, and then that turned into the meat business. You know, I sort of had to ask people ask me, hey man, raise me a steer. And that's kind of where Coker Farms came about. But it was really eye-opening to me once I got those cattle. I mean, I figured a guy with 100 head of cattle would be able to, you know, provide a good living for his family. And that's not the case anymore. I mean, there's just no way. Unless you were given the land, given the equipment, and $100,000 to start with, you can forget it. You know, being a nurse anesthetist, I've got a pretty good income. And even with that, trying to build this thing has been almost impossible.
Now you actually went viral a few months back with a video you did about the nursing stuff, didn't you?
Yeah.
So, I was random. I was like, hey, I recognize that guy.
Yeah.
Million views later.
So that was another journey. I was actually raised in a trailer park over in Pearl, good folks, and you know, wanted to be a nurse anesthetist, and so I just kind of told my story.
What is it? A nurse and what?
A nurse anesthetist. We put people to sleep for surgery.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And we do anesthesia. And so, yeah, I just kind of told that little – I'd been a CRNA, was a nurse anesthetist for 10 years. And it was the day that my 10-year anniversary, I just kind of wrote a little thing on Facebook, and it got like 15,000 likes and 10,000 comments, and it just went viral. I just didn't think anything about it when I posted it. But yeah, so the cattle business has been something I've been very passionate about. I'd love to do it more of a full-time manner one of these days. But like just last week, I just bought my first hay cutter. For $4,000, you know, and it was a used hook cutter. And people think that, you know, farmers make a lot of money, but it's not the case. Even when I'm supporting it with my salary, it's still just almost impossible.
People confuse generating a lot of money and making a lot of money.
Yeah.
As being the same thing.
Yeah.
It's like when I was in the car business, people thought because they were spending $100,000 on a truck, they were spending $100,000 with me. I'm like, no, you're spending $99,500 with Ford. You know, you're spending about $500 with me, which I am very, very grateful and appreciative of. But
yeah.
But I can't help how much this costs.
Well, you know, that's the thing about it, man. I mean, we've gotten the technology in this country has gotten so advanced that a new diesel truck's 70 or 80 grand. A hay baler's 50 grand.
If you can get them.
Yeah. And so the input cost to do this operation is just so extreme that these farmers have been fighting this for years and years, there's not another occupation out there that requires as much determination as being a farmer. I mean, these people do not have quit in them. And when you go and you see every week these farmers are selling out because they're finally done. They're done with, 24/7 job and not getting paid for it. That's a big problem because when I go to the sale barns, I am the youngest person in those sale barns by a lot.
And you were telling me these guys aren't passing, a lot of these guys, I'm sure there's some, aren't passing this down to the next generation. They're getting into other stuff. They're selling out their lands. Their farms are being developed in the neighborhoods.
Yeah, that's worth more in real estate than it is in farming. They'll never pay for it farming. So they're just like, I'm going to go ahead and sell this and move on. And it's a scary feeling. I mean, I have seen it firsthand because of what I do for a living and supporting this thing and still barely surviving. And, it's a sad thing to watch. And what we need is somebody that can get higher in the political arena that has been a farmer and knows the inputs of this operation. Like Brian Rhodes, my good buddy in Pillar Hatchie, he was raised on a chicken farm, cattle farm. He knows what it's like. We need people like this to fight for the American farmer. I mean, there's nothing more American than a farmer. I mean, and when we turn our backs on that, I mean, where are we going to have a starting point from there?
No doubt about it, man. We have been turning our backs on farmers for a long time.
Yeah.
The fact that we get meat, fish from China, meat from God knows where. It's just what we've done to the American farmer. I grew up, my father and his side of the family were farmers. You know, up in Yazoo City, he transitioned from, not that kind of transition, lefties. He transitioned from being a farmer to owning a Massey Ferguson dealership up in Yazoo City.
Oh yeah,
So I was around that, and it was it wasn't cattle. It was cotton and soybean and stuff of that nature. And
$500,000
cotton gin, cotton picker, and what are those big? Anyway,
yeah, that's above my pay grade.
Mine too. Look, man, I just loved being a kid playing on all them old tractors and stuff.
Yeah, but those guys are fronting a lot of money to do that business. I can't imagine what. And I mean, like I said, $70,000 trucks. That's nothing. For a combine,
The combine, that's the word I was looking for.
$500,000 for a combine, I cannot imagine paying that.
So let's bring it back to the cattle stuff.
Yeah.
What is Biden's price hike on grain and stuff doing to you guys?
They're killing us. I mean, absolutely killing us. I mean, a finishing ration to feed cattle on, like I do, to feed them for butcher, is $485 a ton. And when I started feeding these steers a few years ago, it was $190 a ton. Fertilizer, it's actually come down. Last week I bought some fertilizer Friday and it come down to like $840 a ton, but it was almost $1,000. And when I started this, it was $300. So that's the input cost that I'm talking about. A jug of herbicide was $40. Now it's over $100. The problem with it is that the cows aren't bringing any more money. So,
let me ask this. Okay. Cause it's easy for me to sit here on the radio and make all my assumptions, but I'm not boots on ground on a farm. Was this inflation in your cost of your input cost, as you refer to it as, was this happening prior to the Ukraine invasion?
Oh yeah.
So
it was,
not to drag you into politics, but I just want to be clear. This was happening before Putin's price hike?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it has gone up
substantially.
So, yeah, that's a new word. it was already started. All these input costs have already been rising. The Ukraine invasion was just a nail in the coffin.
I mean, it's icing on the cake there.
Yeah.
All right, look, man, we're going to take a break real quick. We ran over on that first segment. You're listening to the Clay Edwards Show. I'm joined by Bradley Coker with Coker Farms. Y'all go give him a follow on Facebook. Just go type in Coker Farms. It's one word, by the way, on Facebook.
That's right.
And it will pop right up. And, hey, man, maybe you can break some bread with a local man here on WYAB. We'll be right back. Welcome back in to the Clay Edwards Show, the free-range human show of choice, your daily dose of reality radio, as we like to call it here. This segment is going to be brought to you by, how about my friends over at Complete Exteriors Roofing and Gutters. Complete Exteriors Roofing and Gutters in Pearl wants to help you determine who to use when seeking a roof repair or work on your gutters. You'll need to choose a qualified, certified company that has a local brick and mortar building, a company that's been in business for longer than 2 years, and offers a warranty. Complete Exteriors has a 4.9 Google review, and I'm going to tell you what, I say this every time, and this is off script here. You're not in business for 16 years and have a 4.9 Google review by accident. That's a lot of time for people to go in and sabotage your Google reviews, because all it takes is one bad customer. Anyway, to have right at five, that's basically a five. Some jerk gave them a four somewhere along the way, and it brought it down to 4.9. Anyway, that speaks volumes, because most people only run online and post anything when they're mad. So to have a 4.9 Google review after being in business for 16 years, that says a lot about Complete Exteriors Roofing and Gutters. Anyway, off my diatribe there. Check them out online, CompleteExteriorsMS.com. And don't forget, they offer a Roofs for Troops discount, or a rebate, should I say. You get $250 rebate for all active and retired military on a new roofing system. So, again, check Complete Exteriors Roofing and Gutters out online at CompleteExteriorsMS.com. And if you're out in the Pearl area right there on Highway 80, they're located on top of the hill right across from the new Rick's Pro Truck. All right, so in studio, joined by Bradley Coker with Coker Farms, located right out there in Pillahatchie, Mississippi. But he's often in his hot rod meat truck, looks like an old milk truck, and he's running around selling meat at the entrance, I guess, in neighborhoods. I know you guys go out to Reunion. I see you out in Rankin County a good
bit. Lake Caroline, Cornerstone, Brandon Farmers Market, Madison Farmers Market, Meridian.
What has been the reaction to stuff like that? I see you in like the downtown farmers market in Brandon every now and then. How are people, I guess, they're being very receptive to this? I mean, this is a really unique deal. And the meat, just so people, I want to paint a picture here. It's ICQ. It's individually packaged and frozen.
Right.
That's the word for it, ICQ, right?
Yeah. It's by the cut.
And don't get too hung up in the fact that it's frozen. You want it frozen.
Man, you can't tell the difference.
No, you can't. Put it in some water. Let it depending on how quick you need to defrost it.
Thing about it is those cattle are processed individually, and then they're flash frozen.
Yeah.
And vacuum sealed and flash frozen. So the chance of E. coli is like slim to none. And then it's already vacuum sealed and frozen. So if you want to stock up, it's already in your freezer. It's good. The FDA says 8 months. I've had customers, eat it way past then and been fine.
Well, you know what? I'm glad you brought that up. Stocking up. There's a lot of fear in the world right now. Fear inside Clay Edwards about. I'm scared to death about what is looming as we get closer to the fall. With food shortages and stuff. If people want to stock up now, say me and Kim Wade, we want to go in on a cow together.
Mm-hmm.
We want to split a cow. We can buy that cow at market price today and then get it. Is that how that works? If we buy today, we can reserve the market price for today. And when we get the cow in, say, 2 months, 3 months, whatever, how does that work?
So what we do is we're processed at a USDA facility. So we're able to charge by the pound. So what we do is a little different. We don't charge by dress weight. We charge by how much weight you get back. And that's all you get charged on. So there's no guesswork in it. So if you reserve, you pay a deposit. We're usually about a month or two backed up. I've only been reserving for a month at a time now because of the input costs is increasing. I don't want to bury myself, I did that back in COVID. And so then we'll let you know. We'll do a cut sheet with you. And then we'll tell you when we're going to take it to the processor and when we're going to get it back.
So but the price would – you do a deposit, but if the market price changes – in a month, you'll pay market price at that time of delivery.
Yeah, and ours doesn't really fluctuate that much because we just do it by the month. So
what's causing, if it doesn't fluctuate that much, what's causing the spike in the grocery stores? Is that just the cost of them getting it? I guess when you get it directly from you, it's just different. Are you able to save a little money versus
going
to the store?
I'm not profiting these big profits like the four big packers in the United States are. That's the problem. Meat is expensive, but it's not because of the farmer. The farmer's not getting any cut of that. I mean, it's the packers.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping with, the kill market was really high, and a lot of people culled a lot of their cattle because they were almost worth more as a cull, as a kill cow, than they were bred. So I'm worried that we're not going to have that big of a calf crop this year, and we're already down on our numbers. So, I would say in the fall, but most definitely in the spring, you could see some very high prices in the store, unless these packers absorb some of this cost, because they are under investigation. So maybe, you know, they'll say, well, we'll just eat some of this and we won't hike it sky high.
So from a common sense standpoint, if nothing else, it's good to stock up now.
Oh yeah, absolutely. We sell a lot. That's how we got started, as Wholes and Halves, and that's our main business. I mean, I have people calling every day reserving halves and wholes. And, you know, like I said, it's hard to keep up because the business is good. We're finally starting to figure things out, who to use, the processor cattle. We've done a lot of cattle with him, and we know when we drop them off what we're going to get back. And that's why I can tell you that you're going to get charged a particular price per pound, because I know how good he is, and yeah. I know what I'm going to get back.
All right, so one of the other things we kind of talked about a little bit that I'm curious of, and as I'm learning, I've been doing like carnivore and keto diets. I'm eating a lot more meat than normal.
I like people like you.
Oh yeah, yeah. I am your best customer, the best type customer anyway. So a lot of things you hear out there is grass fed versus grain fed versus grass fed grain finished. What does Coker Farms do? What's the difference? What creates the best version of the meat? Meat, consumable meat.
Well, I mean, cows are meant to eat grass. I mean, they're not meant to eat feed 24/7. So we always have our cattle on pasture, and they have all the feed they want with a creep feeder. We start them on a finishing ration. We'll introduce it to them a couple pounds a piece in buckets, and then once they get to a certain point and their rumen's set for that type of feed, we'll put them on a full whatever free choice feed they want. But they're always on grass pasture to the day that they're going to the processor. And that, to me, does a lot for the meat and for the health of the animal, you know. So that's how this thing got started.
So just to completely understand here, that is grass-fed, grain-finished?
Right. Our grass quality is not good enough, really, in this state to finish cattle on grass. Our protein is not good enough. Bahia grass does not have enough protein in it like alfalfa does. So you're not going to get a lot of marbling in your meat. And if I sold you a grass-fed cow, it'd be good for your health because, yeah, the crops aren't sprayed that it's ingesting and all this other stuff. But as far as my reputation as a meat producer, you know, oh, man, Coker's meat's tough and all this other stuff, you know, we have done some of that kind of stuff. And actually, I actually took a cow to the processor that was all grass-fed for my customers that want grass-fed meat. As far as steaks like ribeyes and fillets, I just can't put my name on it.
You want the marble. You want the fat. So I was having a conversation with a buddy of mine, Steve, who listens to the show, and I did a boat for him at my shop the other day, and I was telling he had heard that you were going to be on, and he was excited about the show, and I was trying to talk to him. I was like, well, you know, I think I prefer all grass fed. And he's like, no, you wouldn't.
No.
He's like, no, you wouldn't, and kind of explaining it. But then I know other people who are just strictly looking at it from a what goes in my body perspective.
Yeah, no doubt.
And they're saying you want all grass fed from a health perspective.
Absolutely.
But you're going to sacrifice. Yeah. So you're going to make some sacrifices for that.
Right. I mean, there's no arguing to that, and that's the way God made them, to eat grass and graze grass, and that's what's the most healthiest for them.
Well, and let me ask this. So if you were to do all grass fed, is that brings your cost down, obviously.
Absolutely. But then again, my reputation goes, yeah. You know, because people want tender steaks. They want marbling. Whenever I show somebody a steak, that's the first thing they look at is for the marbling. If it's not marbling, they don't want it.
No.
You know, so that's what I take pride when I get that meat back. That's what makes me go, man. I'm like, man, yeah, this is marbled. I did my job. I spent the money on the good feed, and the finished product is amazing.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, we've gone into this crazy high-end steak stuff with all the Wagyu.
Yeah,
we and did all this. And do you guys mess with that at all?
We did. I can't charge somebody that much money for. I mean, I have to. It takes 31 months to grow a Wagyu off versus an 18-month steer. And so the input cost is double. But I can't charge a customer that much money for meat. I feel bad about it. I can't sleep at night. So I was discounting all these Wagyu steaks for people and stuff, and I just didn't enjoy it.
Yeah,
wasn't my thing.
That does seem like a lot. I mean, I've never even tried Wagyu. Well, I mean, I've had Dave's Triple B's Wagyu veal cutlet, but I've never actually had had a Wagyu steak.
That guy's got some good stuff.
He does, man. He's right over here in Florida too. Yeah. I hated that we lost him in the Jackson area, but I understand why.
Yeah,
you know. But like I said, that veal cutlet that he's got.
If you want Wagyu, go to him.
Yeah,
I got the Angus.
You got the Angus.
Yeah.
Hey, so we got about 3 minutes before the next break. Let's talk a little bit about the whole process. You know, a guy like me just thinks, all right, well, Bradley Coker at Coker Farms, the cow was born there, the cow dies there, he cuts it up, and it goes to the store. That's not how it works. It's not a one-stop shop.
No.
But tell us the process from birth to retail.
So you've got cow-calf producers that have cows that put them with a bull and they have the calf. They raise them up to a weaning age. They wean them. They send them to the sale barn. They sell them there, and the order buyers buy them. Or a local farmer buys a heifer to put with his bull. But most of the time, it's an order buyer buying them for feedlots. A stocker will buy them and put them on grass and feed them until they're what they call a feeder calf. And that feeder calf, 600, 700, 800 pounds. And then they buy them and ship them to the feedlot. The feedlot puts them on a finishing ration and gets them to the finish weight, about 12 to 1,500 pounds. That's where then the packers come in and buy them at those feedlots, whatever's on the show list is what they call it. They come in, these cattle are available. They, most of the time they're already in the futures market. So then they buy them, and then that's how it gets to the four major processors and then to the retail counter.
So the packer is the next to last step before. So the processor – so does the processor give it back to the packer? Explain that to me. I just want to make sure I'm understanding it right.
No,
or does the processor sell directly to the retail outlet?
Right, exactly.
Okay, got it. That is four or five steps?
Mm-hmm.
Different people that have to touch this cow along the way?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different people in the cattle business. You've got backgrounders and feeders and stockers and cow-calf operations, and then you have the packers and the feedlots.
Interesting. So, I mean, it's no wonder it costs so much.
Well, yeah, I mean,
we just see $30, for a ribeye on the shelf. I'm like, man, that seems high. But by the time you go by and you ration that out and then you add the storage profit on the top of it,
When you've got fuel as much as it is to get the cattle out west, but also, there's the liabilities in the guy that's raising them. That's where all the liability is, because when the packer buys it and, it's harvested in the next few days. The liability's gone. I mean, the guy out there that's in the ice storm, calving calves and like that ice storm we had last year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the guy that's miserable, or the water troughs leaking and all this other stuff. And like this heat wave, he's out there baling hay all day. That's the guy that's putting in all the input cost. But that's not the guy that's profiting the money.
Man, what happens? We got about a minute before the break here, but what happens when an ice storm like that comes through? I mean, they just got to tough it out?
Yeah, I mean, but cattle out in the north, they don't see solid ground until the spring, so yes. They're used to it. But our cattle around here, they're not used to that.
They are used to the heat.
Yeah, and they're not up there, so it's a trade off. But you just got to keep that hay going to them, and protein.
Hey, look, we got a question on the Guns and Gear text line here, real quick. It says, "Do you plan on doing a Kobe brand?"
No, that's a Japanese type cattle. We have Akaoshi and Wagyu here, or mm-hmm. American Wagyu, but we don't really have Kobe.
Gotcha. All right, you're listening to The Club. We're joined by Bradley Coker with Coker Farms. We're going to come back, man, the plane for the hour on WYAB. All right, we are back here on The Clay Edwards Show. I'm going to finish up with Bradley, man. He's getting ready to go start his week doing farmer stuff, man. Brad, closing the show with you today, or closing our interview today. One of the things we were just talking about, I think is really, really interesting, is just – What can the state do to help farmers out? What can we do other than just support you? Because apparently it's just going to take more than just support from the consumer.
Yeah.
What do the farmers need to be successful?
Well, we just need some people that's going to be fighting for us. We need people that's actually going to be looking into these input costs. And, hey, man, y'all are sinking. What can we do to help? And that's why I was mentioning Brian earlier, Brian Rhodes. I mean, we need somebody in the political arena that can know, they've been farmers. They know how it is. They know the input cost. We need people like this that's making a lot of the rules or standing up for the farmer. Hey, man, I mean, look, we need to do this. We need to make sure these guys are taken care of, because that's what feeds America. I mean, you can have fancy cars and all this stuff all you want, but if you ain't got the farmer, we don't have anything.
If you keep pushing the local farmer out of the business, we're not going to have any more local farms. I mean, I don't want to be Captain Obvious here, but that don't sound like a good thing.
I mean, what are we going to eat, cardboard?
I mean, this whole show's premise, and a lot of this station, for that matter, is based on supporting locally owned businesses, and locally owned businesses supporting us by advertising. And our listeners supporting them. It's a vicious cycle of supporting one another. And, you know, I'd much rather break bread with a local farmer than the grocery store.
Yeah. I mean, you know, some of these grocery stores are locally owned, and that's great, too.
For sure. You know, like Allen's and Brandon. Right. I try to break bread there. And
yeah. Been around for years. And, you know, those kind of guys, that's the kind of guys we need to support. Not these big, you know, national conglomerates. That's, you know, that's not what we need.
Absolutely. Look, Bradley, it was a pleasure, man. Thank you for getting up and coming over here.
Thanks for having me on, man.
Enjoy your week. And look, y'all go to Coker, that's C-O-K-E-R Farms on Facebook. Check them out. And if you're feeling it, reach out to them and break bread with them. And this is the Clay Edwards Show, and I'll be back here for a whole another hour. We're going to talk about Joe Biden falling off his bicycle. We're going to talk about the Afro hair pick statue down in New Orleans. Is this what George Floyd died for? We'll investigate coming up next on the Clay Edwards Show.
Thanks for listening. Tune in tomorrow at 7 a.m. as the Clay Edwards Show discusses all that is going on in and around the city of Jackson.
This concludes our broadcast day.
Right here on 103.9 WYAB.